Time for this week's Case in Point on The Takeaway. The question we're asking today, when someone is convicted of murder and a prosecutor is trying to convince a jury to put a defendant to death, what happens if the victim's family members come out either for or against capital punishment?
There isn't a clear role for victims in this process. I mean, they're allowed to get up on the stand, but what is the point of them getting up? Is it supposed to be therapeutic for them? Is it supposed to be giving the jurors information that's going to dictate the punishment? There's sort of not a lot of clarity.
We go to Texas now, where a decade ago, Paul Story was convicted of murdering Jonas Cherry. Story was eventually given the death penalty, but during sentencing, prosecutor Christy Jack cited the wishes of Cherry's family members in order to get the death sentence. But the victim's family is now calling that sentence into question. I spoke with Marie Shema, who is a staff writer at the Marshall Project, about this ongoing legal dilemma.
So Christy Jack was making a closing argument to the jury, you know, asking them to deliver a death sentence for Paul Story. And she said, it goes without saying, everybody who loved Jonas Cherry, who was the victim, wants the death penalty, thinks the death penalty is appropriate in this case. That, of course, was not true. The parents of the victim opposed the death penalty. They shared that with the prosecution. They said they didn't want the man who had killed their son to be executed for it. They understood that they weren't allowed to have a final say over the result in the case, and they were accepting of that. But when the prosecutor said this to the jury, it was technically inaccurate. And so now Paul Story's lawyers are arguing that that is a bad enough infraction that his sentence should be overturned.
Were the parents in the courtroom when this statement was made?
They were. And I haven't spoken to them, but I have spoken to other members of the family, and that line just sort of passed. I mean, it was one sentence out of, you know, a 20-minute long speech that the prosecutor made. So it didn't sort of perk up their ears at the time. They didn't raise a ruckus about it. But now when they were approached, you know, many years later by Paul Story's lawyers, they said, well, no, that's not true. That's not what we wanted. The inaccuracy there is really where this case kind of becomes a complicated look into how victims' wishes show up in these cases.
Why didn't this come up during the appeal?
You know, it's not necessarily common for the lawyers for the man on death row to go seeking out the parents of the murder victim. You know, if you read in the trial transcript that they supported the death penalty, you don't necessarily have a reason to believe that that is not true, because it's usually true. It was just by fluke that community activists in Fort Worth knew the parents, knew the lawyers, put them together, realized that there was this mistake there. Paul Story was facing an execution date, and the parents wrote a letter to the governor and the Board of Pardons and Paroles in Texas asking basically for the execution to be halted. Their opposition and the fact that their opposition has been consistent this entire time, even since before the trial, has now become grounds for this appeal.
So we're talking about a single sentence that defense lawyers believe may hold the key to preventing this man from being executed.
It's dramatic, but it's a very important sentence. These death penalty cases often have a transcript of 1,000 pages, and this is the line. It is testament to very good defense lawyering to pore over every single sentence in a case and be willing to kind of lift up one sentence as an argument to overturn the sentence. We'll see what the judge thinks. You know, they may or may not think that this infraction is bad enough.
I understand the emotion by it, the passion that's surrounding all this. A man is dead. Another one could soon be put to death. But the wishes of his family, they shouldn't actually have an influence over which way the pendulum of justice swings.
That's right. And officially, that's exactly how it goes, because although victims technically cannot get up on the stand and ask the jury to set an execution, prosecutors are allowed wide leeway to make decisions about whether to seek the death penalty in the first place. And they often solicit the views of the family as part of their decision making. You know, the jury technically isn't allowed to hear the family beg one way or the other. But when a prosecutor says this is what the family wants, it's a very, very powerful thing to say. It drives that conversation in the jury room. One juror from this case has spoken out and said that had he known that the parents in fact opposed the death penalty, he says he would have held out and pushed the jury much harder to deliver a life sentence instead of death.
The Supreme Court, I understand, has weighed in on this. What'd they say?
So the Supreme Court, about 25 years ago, in a case called Payne versus Tennessee, said that the victim family members can get on the stand, they can talk about the impact that the crime had on their lives, but they can't say, we want the death penalty or we want life in prison. They can't ask for a specific punishment. Of course, often if they get up there and they talk about how destructive the crime was for their family, how much they're grieving, the implication is that the jury is hearing they want the harshest punishment possible. I mean, that's just practically what ends up happening. It plays out in lots of different cases in lots of different ways. And this case is interesting because it played out in a somewhat dramatic way.
So many parts of this case are incredibly cloudy. What do you think the biggest challenges that the court faces going forward are going to be?
In this case, I think that a big challenge is going to be just teasing apart the conflicts and memories between the different people who participated. So, for example, the prosecution says that they told the defense lawyers about the family's opposition. The defense lawyers say, no, they didn't. They never did. The prosecution says, well, you know, that one line about everyone in the family wanting the death penalty, that was based on the fact that they changed their mind during the trial and said they did want the death penalty. Family members say, no, that never happened. We didn't change our mind. So what I think is really tough for the judge in this case, this judge in Fort Worth, is to tease apart all of these conflicts and memories. Perhaps people are remembering things in conflicting ways because they miscommunicated with each other. Perhaps somebody's lying. But there's a great deal of haze around what exactly happened in this courtroom. That's common in death penalty cases, right? That these appeals come up and there's these debates about lines of the trial transcript 10, 20, 30 years later, and people's memories are hazy. And that's a real challenge for the judiciary in these cases.
Reading your piece, I was fascinated. One part struck out to me. You write that even if Story's sentence is upheld, he could be granted a pardon by the Texas Governor Greg Abbott. Now, the governor obviously is free to consider what he wants. He doesn't necessarily have to consider the wishes of the family. Do you have any indication how that might go down?
I think it'll be really fascinating to watch because in the past few months, the governor and also the Board of Pardons and Paroles, which votes on the matter and then hands a recommendation to the governor, which he can accept or reject. A few months ago, they did actually stop an execution and grant clemency to a man named Thomas Whitaker. And part of the reason in that case was that a family member of the victim said, I've seen enough death. And the governor listened to that and the board listened to that and he was spared. And that suggests that there is some interest in listening to victims in these cases. And so I think this case will test that in a lot of ways because you do have family members saying, we don't want this. And the governor can decide to listen to them or he can decide not to.
Thank you very much. Maurice Shama, staff writer at the Marshall Project. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.